about how we're protecting the trust, go to pabread.com to watch a short video.
How's it going, Sue?
Hey!
Have you seen this commercial?
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck.
Isn't that the horse racing school that Bob Baffert went to?
Yeah, Todd Fletcher, too, and lots of other major players in every area of the industry.
Really? Like what?
Well, for starters, we have graduates who are executives at Churchill Downs, NYRA, Darley America, Gulfstream, Keeneland, you name it. They're also regulators, racing officials, bloodstock agents, track announcers. My class had a job placement rate of almost 90%.
Wow, what other college program has results like that?
What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three, about, call it 12 minutes in. So what do we got? 45 minutes to fill out this Tuesday. And as we wait for Andy, he's going to join us momentarily. I did reach out to John Lease, and of course, John, you know from Will Rogers, but also from Del Mar, and that rumor that Will Rogers is going to convert their new pick five to a jackpot. John did confirm that. They do not know if it's going to be today because they have to confirm with the tote company that the changes have occurred. So if they get that confirmation, we'll pass it along, at least on Twitter. Be aware that if it's not going to be today, it'll be probably tomorrow. They're going to switch. I don't know. I don't really get it. But considering how successful it's been already, why they would? I mean, I understand the appeal of the jackpot concept. Anyway, I did want to follow up to everybody on that. Right now, Andy Serling joins us from the New York Racing Association. Andy, good morning.
I don't understand the appeal of the jackpot bet. I'll go to my grave not understanding the appeal of jackpot bets.
It's the strangest thing.
But hey, listen, there's a lot of things I don't understand, you know?
Yeah, And I guess, you know, seeing what's happening and knowing that their meet, you know, does have, you know, a projected finish before things move to Remington and or Lone Star, I guess they're seeing what happened at Fawner and, you know, the potential for, you know, for supersize handle. But if you're handling $200,000 already, I mean, your pick five is a week and a half old. I don't get it.
They're going to change whatever.
Yes, apparently.
It's not my place to get in the business of other tracks.
No, I know.
It's not a bad. I'm happy. I don't like the fact that we offer it. You know, I've been pretty clear on that. So,
well, what you've been offering, of course, is daily entertainment and fodder for either people that are. Have a historic appreciation for the game or need to get one?
Well, nobody needs to get anything. People can choose to get whatever they want. You know, you're obviously referring to polls I've done on Twitter. Listen, people should vote for their favorite horse if they want. If they want to act like Medaglia d'Oro is a better horse than Will's Way or Java Gold, that's their prerogative. Whether or not he was, we'll never know. Better sire than they were, wasn't the question, but whatever, you know. I like talking about horses from the past and finding these things. I'd be happier if people would one day figure out why I, you know, often leave out the horse that would get 98% of the vote. But I don't think they'll ever figure that one out either, or most people have. But one or two every day are surprised. but just trying to have fun and just trying to provide a distraction in a time when people could use as many distractions as they could find.
No doubt. And, you know, and some, like the one yesterday regarding the New York Breads, that was strictly a personal preference kind of a thing. I mean, who you were a fan of or who yeah. who you made money on.
It's amazing how nobody remembers Band Rock, right?
That's who I voted for.
Me too. You know, I would have voted for him. Can't vote, but if I could, I would. I mean, he's the only horse, I believe he's the only horse ever to sweep the entire four New York Red Stakes, right? The, what is it, the Kingston, the Ashley T. Cole, the West Point, and the Mohawk. He did it in 2009. He's the only horse that ever did that. The other horses were good for a longer period of time. And to be honest, I wouldn't say the other horses were necessarily better. It's very close, but there was a period of time when Band Rock was very, very good. A lot of people don't know horses beyond 10 years in a lot of cases. Well, you know, it's funny with the Medaglia d'Oro. I didn't bring this up, but I had a poll earlier about horses that won the Travers, and not the Travers, the Wood Memorial, but missed the Derby. And Buddha got like 6% of the vote or 10%. He got a very, very low number percentage of the vote. He might have been the best one of all of them. He beat Medaglia d'Oro. Yet Medaglia d'Oro had that poll the other day. You know, over 50% of the people voted for him over some very, very good horses, which is sort of funny. So people don't know Buddha, but they know Medaglia d'Oro's name, and I think a lot of it's because he's had success, so much success as a sire. They've heard of him, but maybe they don't know how good he was. A very good racehorse, and I don't want to pretend that Medaglia d'Oro was a totally undeserving winner, but he wasn't clearly better than either Will's Way or Dravago. Listen, Lemon Drop Kid was very, very good for a period of time as well.
I liked him. Yep.
Not as though he was some sort of phony. I mean, he won big races as a 3-year-old and went on and then did some very, very good things as a 4-year-old. Unfortunately for him, he sort of fell apart in the Breeders' Cup, right? He was a complete no-show that day. But before that, he'd been terrific.
You know, you bring up Buddha, and it's so funny because his name came up weeks ago when War Emblem died, and
why did his name come up when War Emblem died? Probably the same year, I guess.
Well, because he scratched on what, Thursday, or either didn't get entered.
Or he scratched that late. That would have been a race because the pace.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, he was two horses we're talking about, Buddha and Will's Way, both horses trained by Jimmy Bond, and both very good horses. I mean, Buddha could have been any kind of good horse, and that was a Goodwood Memorial, you know, with Medaglia d'Oro and Sunday Break. Medaglia d'Oro just didn't show up in the Derby, and then for whatever reason, he was a total no-show in the Preakness. I thought he couldn't lose that Preakness, and then I bet him in the Belmont, and he lost to that ridiculous horse. It's
the
horse of
Kenneth
Peaks. Sarafa. Sarafa, right. Yeah, the horse I had made a lot of money on when he won the Sir Barton, or whatever it was called back then on Preakness Day.
Yes, it was the Sir Barton.
Yeah, he beat that Shah Jahan, the $2 million Lucas horse, the heavy favorite. He's coming off a couple of second-place finishes where he got terrible trips. And to $8, he sort of couldn't lose. Remember, I hit the pick four. They didn't reach the guarantee.
The minimum, the guarantee.
The guarantee was like $300,000, and they only got like $200,000. I don't even remember that Preakness, but it was a bitter cold day. It was freezing out. I was wearing a leather winter jacket. And it was freezing. Mid-40s or something. Preakness is so funny because so many times you've been there, it's been 90, and then times you've been there, where it was in the 40s.
I remember it very well because we were doing the barbecue in the infield, and
it was awful.
I mean, it was bad. It was rough.
I took a train down from New York to go. Remember, I drove back with Steve, Chris, and Robin Foster's wife. from there. But yeah, that was a rough weather day. But I think Dave Donk won the Gallaret. I believe the last leg of that pick four, Dave Donk won. I'm almost sure. Look that up.
What
was that, 2002?
Yeah.
I think so.
It's pretty funny. I'm as we were talking, I pulled up Banrock because I wanted to see, you know, because I remember he was a horse that I got very. That may be the horse, Andy, actually, where I really started to get to know Tom Bush, and you know, and have him on regularly. And I think that's one of the reasons
Tom did a great job with that horse.
He, you know, and I'm just looking, there's like actually a couple of things notable out of this. There's some races that have disappeared from the calendar, including the Academy Award.
Well, the Academy Award was never really that important a race in the calendar.
No, it's just a...
Are you sure it wasn't renamed?
It was just a 75,000 restricted stake, but it's gone from the landscape. Here.
D'Estasio train? Academy Award?
Dick D'Estasio. Richie O'Connell?
Who? No, O'Connell? I don't think so. Maybe okay. I'll look it up. I don't think so, though.
The reason I pulled up Banrock, I also wanted to see his open company record, and Bush did try him when he was going well. He did try a few graded stakes. He was third in the Red Smith when it was a grade two, and behind Strike a Deal, oh my gosh, which I want to say was
Alan Goldberg,
exactly. And Lauro was second. Yeah, absolute. That was his only graded stake placement. He tried the Red Smith and the United Nations. He was fifth in one of Precious Passions, I think won two in a row, if I'm not mistaken, for Mary Hartman. He was fifth that day, beaten seven. And the River City, he tried the River City as well. He tried three graded stakes and one place.
Yeah, he went to Churchill, I remember that.
Yep. And Rahi Strada, oh my gosh, Rahi Strada won that running. How about that? And I'm looking for your Donk horse.
So am I. I'm looking through it. I'm wrong, I think. The Gallaret was won by Quid Nascro, which wasn't Donk. I'm wrong about that. Maybe Donk had a horse in there.
Donk did win the Dixie. He won the Dixie in 2008.
Yeah, but I'm wrong. It was him. But this is the race. It was Quid Nascro that paid 15A. It was Mary Epler. The pick four paid, no matter, paid $3,000. For a dollar. Dollar was the minimum back then. It made 6,100. The pool was only 208,000, not just under 209,000. Yeah, that was a tough day. Let's look up who trained the Academy Award.
All right.
Anyway.
As you do that, let's also fold in you know, some of the racing action, and of course another Fox show on Saturday. And you know, Andy, the racing at Oaklawn, if it would stop raining on Saturdays, I think we'd enjoy it a little bit more. But some interesting performances on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Stott's a very good horse, and he's obviously still a good horse. He made that big run. It was D'Estasio.
How about you? You're unbelievable for Peter Blum, who bred him.
Right. Yeah, that family, all those Peter Blum horses. He got a very fast pace, and I think, you know, some people, you know, are surprised. Somebody more than very notable seemed surprised that he was able to make up that ground. As a matter of fact, because he got a very quick pace to close into, and I know it's a short stretch, but he. It's not surprising he made that run and won. He's a good horse, and he seems like he just continues to run well. It'll be interesting to see, you know, what he does for Al this year. But I also think that the second horse in Probable Rick is huge in there. You know,
yes, he did.
Green horse. I mean, he did. He was four wide on top of the pace that seemed pretty quick, and it completely fell apart and just got run down, you have to think if he probably would have drawn a better post, he might have sat the right trip, and he probably would have won the race. And maybe that's the improbable that we thought last year we would see. It just sort of never really materialized, or didn't, you know, fits and starts, and didn't win races, though losing to horse like Omaha Beach is not exactly a disgrace, right?
No, not at all. On the same racetrack, too.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what he does going forward.
Yeah, I even said to Al Stahl yesterday, I said it looked like Thomas the Tot was going to go right on by, and boy, oh boy, Van Dyke and Improbable responded, and I was surprised, because it looked, especially as you say, after that pace, you thought, all right, well, he's just going to meander down, and Improbable responded. I'm sure Baffert, was not disappointed. Certainly an hour later.
But I'm sure he's happy with his effort. Just
yeah, no doubt.
How
far does that horse want to go, though? I mean, what do you think?
Is he probably a mile? I'm sure the hope is that we run them that mile at some time. You know, I'd like to be optimistic and think we will. And I have to imagine the race that Bob has always pointed horses for, that's the race that he would like to win. And I don't see why he should have a problem with a mile. It's not like he's run badly at longer distances, right? Didn't he run pretty well in last year's Arkansas Derby, or am I forgetting? Did he run second year? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Did he run second?
He got beat. Yeah, he got beat by Omaha Beach, just ran him down way.
Omaha Beach is a pretty good horse, so I don't know why that's the suggestion, that he can't go a farther distance. A mile may be very good for him, but I don't know that he can. I mean, he ran the better race, and he lost to a very good horse at Tom's Detroit. So I'm not really sure what they should be disappointed. They disappointed don't win, but I don't know. I don't think he wasn't falling apart because of the distance. He was falling apart because of the pace and the fact that he was being a very good horse.
Well, and regarding races collapsing, let's talk about the 3-year-old race and what you saw there. I had a fun conversation with Brett Calhoun yesterday, and this was a horse that, in retrospect, he was really disappointed that he couldn't run in the Louisiana Derby, because he thought he had him absolutely tuned perfectly for the opportunity there, which would have been more money and Derby points. But he was very satisfied, and him and this Chester Thomas just continue to come up with horses, by my standards, who's going to go for the Oaklawn handicap, and now they got a big 3-year-old again.
Well, I don't know if I would call the winner, Mr. Big News, a big 3-year-old. I don't know. It was a slow race on a wet track that featured a quick pace that fell apart, and horses on the outside were doing the best running, and was the horse for Steve Asmussen that had trouble in there, who ran fourth, who got jammed up inside of horses.
Basin.
So, and I think that Farrington Road, who finished second, probably would have won if the horse that won hadn't drifted and sort of caused him to lose a brief moment of momentum in the around a 16th pole, right, or somewhere in that area. And I don't think that Farrington Road's going to be confused by Todd as one of the best horses. If he turns to be the best 3-year-old in his barn, Todd's got some problems going forward, probably. So I don't know. He won. I wouldn't want to get overly excited about him. On the other hand, it is April of their 3-year-old year, and these horses have a right to improve, and perhaps he gets the prerequisite 10 lengths better, and between now and the end of the year, he ends up being somewhat competitive. But I wouldn't want to get carried away just because he won, just as I wouldn't want to be dismissive of Improbable because he lost. I mean, he won, but he'll get smothered by top 3-year-olds, and if he runs back in the Arkansas Derby, what price would he be in the Arkansas Derby if he ran there? 30-1? Similar price to what he was in here, right?
Perhaps.
I'm just trying to be realistic. I'm not sure, I don't have to praise all the winners, and I'm not going to praise him. He won.
I don't think anybody has
to lose if he's the best horse in the race after it was over.
He's a horse that is improving with every start, and he's a horse that's built to go as far as they write races, as they say. I mean, he's
your Belmont horse.
Maybe.
Or maybe it's your tempered tilt horse. Is that race we run at mile and 5/8 to Belmont or something?
Maybe. Yeah, he's out of a Galileo mare. There's some things to like about this horse.
I'm sure they're very happy, and congratulations. But I wouldn't want to anoint that an overly impressive performance.
Well, I think what's interesting about the way the race came off, and I tongue in cheek, called it not the Arkansas Derby.
Well, they ran the race last year.
Well, they ran it afterward, though. It was a different...
They ran on Derby Day, yeah.
Yes, it was a different... It was like a postscript thing.
Who won it last year? Kind of my point.
Was it the horse... No, the horse from...
don't know.
Oh, God, the horse from... it was an okay horse. But I'm drawing a blank. It came back with an 87 buyer. It really did feel like it's like a prep. It
felt like a non-winners of one. I know what it felt like.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not looking to be harsh on the horse, but let's not talk about this horse as though he's a horse that you're supposed to be putting on your list of horses to get really excited about going forward. Let's just have an honest conversation. He's an improving horse and has every right, just like every other three-year-old does at this point, to continue to get better. They're all not going to be that good early in their career. But I don't want to pretend like it was some sort of Herculean performance by any stretch of the imagination.
By the way, it was Laughing Fox that won the...
What has he done since that race?
He has been a source of frustration for Alex and Joanne Leblanc.
Okay, there you have it. It's only frustrating if they thought winning that race is going to propel him to a...
Well, I think they did. I mean, he tried the Preakness, he tried Travers. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Mr. Big News. I'm going to look him up. Hang on a second and bring up the PPs.
Also, Indian.
What's that?
Yeah, Thousand Words Chase.
Thousand Words feels like he just... It just didn't show up again. That's two times in a row.
Well,
did not show up.
No.
Well, actually, Farmington Road hadn't run that badly in the Risen Star. Slow pace, wide trip. Actually, he was probably a logical horse for a lot of people in there.
Well, Mr. Big News didn't run bad in the Risen Star in his division.
Well, he was in a much slower division with a slow pace, but he didn't do any running in there. I'm sorry, Steve.
Okay,
Mr.
that's
Big
fine.
News does not make my list of top 40 3-year-olds right now.
Okay, right now being the operative word. By the way, I do want to bring up one name going back to Academy Award for a second.
Emmy? What?
Art Madrid Jr.
Okay.
This was arguably one of his biggest stake wins in the Manhattan, which was the last race of Academy Award's career, and it's interesting. Art Madrid won a lot of grade twos and threes, and including a couple of races that have subsequently become grade ones, but he never won a grade one. He won almost 2,000 races in his career.
Not surprised. He rode for a long time.
Well, he got hurt, right?
Mostly in Jersey, right?
Yes, but he got bad. He was on his way to a big career and had a series of injuries that kept, I'm going to ask Tony Black about Art Madrid. Because I remember...
asked about the mate.
Yeah, he won the Demoiselle as well, and on Fortunate Faith.
For Lisa Lewis?
At that time, Angel Pena.
But did she train him, or did she train a lot of the foals of Fortunate Faith?
I don't know. That's a good question.
I feel like she trained a bunch of... for some reason, I feel like I kept seeing Fortunate Faith would show up, and Lisa Lewis had some of those horses.
Actually, at the end, this is interesting. I don't know if this was at the end of the career or what, but Delahanty Farm is listed... And I'm curious because She was a Minnesota bred. How about that? Minnesota bred comes in and wins the Demoiselle.
Well, she was bred like the cold weather.
She was 6-1 that day. And Lisa, look at, you're unbelievable. Lisa Lewis did train her at that time.
I thought so, yeah. That's
you're amazing. Yeah, unbelievable. You're unbelievable. You're like...
Well, I think
like
your this. Brain associates, it's a, you know, it's not, your brain associates names with trainers. These are good horses. I mean, it's not, Fortune Faith is a pretty good horse. Adam Dior was a good horse. I don't think it's remarkable I would remember who trained him.
Who was the favorite that she beat? The favorite was 3-5.
Probably Wayne trained her. What year?
1992.
Jesus. Oh, Wayne or Shug?
No, it wasn't Wayne or Shug. 3-5. Contessa at 3-5.
Who's the horse?
True Affair.
I vaguely remember the name.
You know who was
92.
Fortunate Faith, True Affair, Our Tomboy, She's Landing, Missy Moo, I Love You.
Missy Moo, I Love You was Tommy Walsh.
And then...
right? Tommy Walsh, Missy Moo, I Love You, right? I'm almost sure of that.
Missy... she's got babies around or even granddaughters. Tom Walsh is correct. And then Emil Hayati with Mig, Acting Proud with Bailey, and Cirrus Dancer with Jean-Luc Semin for Rusty Arnold.
Well, probably there. Who won the ranch in that year in order?
92?
Yeah.
92.
Won the Remsen 2 years before. Fight the gold.
Ah, nice. 92 was silver of silver for Stanley Shapoff.
Yeah.
And Jacinto. How about that?
Well, I'm sure I was there. Hard to believe I wouldn't have been.
Oh, I'll give you one from 89, my Derby horse, my big 3-year-old the next year that I loved. I had a hat made. Do you remember at Belmont? I forget what day, when it was, on one of the big days, they had like vendors. And there was one vendor with sewing machines where you could pick out a horse hat with a, you know, with a bay, a gray, a dark brown, and they would sew in the name of the horse above the horse, and I got a hat with this horse's name on it.
Who's the trainer? Don't tell me the horse. Who's the trainer?
Woody Stevens.
So his 1990 horse?
1989.
But yeah, I think it's 1993.
93-year-old, yes.
When did he start the streak? This is after the streak.
Yes.
Was he any good?
He was okay.
Well,
I thought
he was against Easy Goer and Sunday Silence. No. A year later.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Against the Bridal and Summer Squall.
The reason I fell for him was because I saw him break his maiden at Saratoga earlier that summer, and I just yonder.
Was he a Claiborne horse?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Claiborne, actually, Claiborne did breed him.
Yeah, I feel like, yonder.
Yonder, that was a period where I used to pick the one stiff after another as a 2-year-old, you know, becoming a 3-year-old. Lost Mountain was another one that I was like crazy for.
Mountain wasn't a bad horse. Tom Bohannon.
No, well, Yonder wasn't a bad horse.
Didn't Lost Mountain finish second to Cahill Road in the Wood Memorial?
That sounds right.
Cahill Road. Cahill Road. Well, that was 91 because he was the Fulden Bridal the next year. Keno Rowe was a monster.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because because Lost Mountain was a Cox's Ridge, and Lob Lolly. It was all
Lob Lolly. Yeah.
Lob Lolly. Yeah.
He's a good horse, Lost Mountain. Really.
I loved him. I loved Lost Mountain.
But yonder Lob Lolly horses back then that were good horses, you know.
Sure.
I mean,
absolutely.
Cox's Ridge was the horse that sort of put them on the map in the '70s, but they had a lot of good horses.
Absolutely.
Van Landingham, the great Van Landingham.
Shug, getting launched Shug's career.
Yeah. Well, they had a number of good horses besides.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Little Missouri.
I don't remember Little Missouri.
Little Missouri upset Rue Art, I think, in like the, in the Brooklyn or something, at one of those races in the summer, the Brooklyn or Suburban, I think Brooklyn. I want to say Rue Art with Pat Day was like 2-5 or some short price. And I think Rue Art may have been like 20-1 in a big field. You there?
Yeah. It's funny. As you're saying that, I'm looking for a picture I've got here of Barkley with Rue Art.
Really?
Yes. You'll love it. I'm going to send it to you. You'll love it.
Who trained Rue Art? Barkley trained Rue Art?
You bet.
Oh, okay. I did not know.
See, I missed an opportunity. I was going to say who trained Ruart, but I figured you knew.
No, I actually didn't. No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I showed it to Barkley a couple of years ago, and he said, "Wow, I have hair."
I don't know if Barkley was ever young, actually. I don't think he was ever young. He's always old.
I think at the end, Lucas
ended up with him. He won the Suburban. He won the Suburban in 1986. And I want it. I bet you he beat. Either he beat or he lost. Maybe he lost the heavy favor to somebody. No, I think. Yeah, it was Lucas, yeah. Whatever.
At the end. Yeah, well, but Barkley had him early.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Barkley had him in the beginning? That's interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, he was running down in Maryland to start out, sure. They ran third in the Jim Beam. Is there any race that's had more names than the Jim Beam?
No. There's nothing even close. I mean,
he won the General George Ruart in his fourth career start. May not have been as big a race in 85. It was a 3-year-old race back then, in fact. That's weird. Must have been.
Yep.
He probably went the Jim Beam, the Garden State Stakes.
He won his first 4 starts.
That is correct. He did. Yeah. Won $1 million.
Ruart was a nice horse. Yeah. I'm sure, and I'm sure Barkley got a nice price for him when the time came.
He won the Nassau. You know what? He must have been the favorite in the Brooklyn and lost to somebody goofy. Let me see who won the 86 Brooklyn. Or can you find that?
I can probably find it pretty darn quick because I'm.
Who's up next here? Because it's almost quarter off.
John White.
We'll go talk to John, and we'll talk next week.
You've been just a wealth of mirth and
that's
enjoyment.
Me.
By the way, this conversation became full circle because Little Missouri won that Brooklyn.
Little Missouri. That's who be. Little Missouri was a. I'm sorry, Little Missouri was the Lob Lolly horse that beat Rue Art. Correct. That's what it was. Yeah, Little Missouri was a huge price. That's what it was. All right, see you later. Bye.
Andy Serling, everybody, and what a great sequence of Brooklyn winners. Highland Blade, Fit to Fight, Bounding Basque, Little Missouri, Wacoit, Wacoit. That is some sequence right there. There's actually a lot of really cool Brooklyn winners. That's something wow. Unbelievable. The Liberal Member, Angel Penna Sr. Winter's Tale. Wow. Unbelievable. Case, let's stay here because we got 15 minutes. Let's get John White in here to close out this another busy morning. I mean, it has been it's been frenetic. I mean, considering that we've only got 2 or 3 racetracks running a day, I can't, we've been we've been chock full of conversation. I haven't heard back yet from John Lease about whether United Tote is able to make the change. So later in the day, before they start their card, I'll see if we got an answer for you. 2:15 Eastern time is the first post today at Will Rogers. And then later, 5 o'clock Eastern, for the action at Foner. And it starts, actually, Foner has got Maiden Special to start things off, going 4. So if you missed the segment with Marcus, I think we really had a nice primer. And, you know, Marcus, very, very savvy, Marcus Hirsch. We are happy to close out the morning. And as we do this, I do want to wish a happy birthday to John Parada. It's John Parada's birthday. And I never noticed before that it's also that John's birthday is being celebrated on the anniversary of Lincoln's assassination. Now, wait a minute. John White is with us, but I do have an update from John Lease. They are adopting the jackpot formula today. The pool will divide 50-50 to multiple winning tickets and the jackpot pool. The jackpot will pay out to any one winner, of course, and will be distributed if no one, you know, depending on how the, you know, you know the drill. And there'll be a force out on closing day, and we'll see if we can't figure out what that is, too, because a little tough to find information on their website, but there you go. So they will start a jackpot today at Will Rogers, races 2 through 6. John White, good morning.
Morning, Steve. John Lees, who is currently second in my fantasy league standings behind Blood Horse's Byron King. I'm holding in fourth place right now. Ruard, I remember when he ran in Southern California, trained by D. Wayne Lucas. One thing I have in common with Andy Serling, I found out this morning, we both bet on Medaglia d'Oro in the Belmont Stakes, and that was a case of not going by buyer figures or past performances. That was strictly a trainer angle on my part in terms of Medaglia d'Oro had finished fourth in the Kentucky Derby and kind of became a wise guy horse going into the Preakness. A lot of people thought he'd had a troubled trip in the Derby, and they kind of overreacted, and he was 3-1 in the Preakness and didn't show up at all. He finished eighth, got beat a long way, and right after the race, a disgruntled Frankel said, I'm going to send him back to California and point him for the grass stakes races at Del Mar in the summer. And then all of a sudden, Frankel pivoted and sent him to New York for the Belmont Stakes, and the fact that Frankel would change his mind like that and run this horse off such a poor performance in the Preakness, in the Belmont, in New York, where he grew up. I mean, I kept telling people, Frankel is not going to send this horse to New York and get embarrassed, you know, in his hometown, so to speak. And the only thing that Andy and I had wrong was that we couldn't beat Sarava, who was 70-1 on the board that day. So that was the Belmont that War Emblem stumbled at the start when he was going for the Triple Crown. As far as Oaklawn, I'm looking forward very much this week to the Apple Blossom as well as the Fantasy, Venetian Harbor shipping to Oaklawn to run in the Fantasy, and I think she's the best three-year-old filly in the country right now for Richard Baltus, and I think, boy, she's going to be very tough to beat in the Fantasy. And how about the Apple Blossom? You've got a race that is shaping up to draw 5 Grade 1 winners. When's the last time we saw a race that wasn't a Triple Crown race or a Breeders' Cup race where we had 5 Grade 1 winners in the race? Serengeti Empress, Come Dancing, CC, Ollie's Candy, and Street Band. Then you also have Go Google Yourself, who's 2-for-2 at Oaklawn, including a win in the recent Biacoa for Samantha Siegel, one of my favorite owners in the game. Golden Award will show up for Bill Mott, and when Mott shows up, you know, that's always something to keep in mind. And then one runner from the Steve Asmussen barn that if she happens to pop into the field, she probably won't, but if she does, I would be very interested, is La Renolata, who was so impressive in her United States debut for Asmussen. And they had talked about the Apple Blossom back when she won her United States debut in early February. In that race, she was sitting fourth early and was only a half a length in front at the eighth pole going a mile and a 16th, and she won by 9 3/4 lengths. So she almost won by 10. And you, how often do you see a horse that's only a half a length in front at the eighth pole win by 10? She's undefeated. She's 5-for-5. She was a Group 1 winner in Argentina, winning a very big race down there, the Group 1 Estrella Distaff. So the fact that she's undefeated, it would be very interesting to me if she did run in the Apple Blossom, as they had talked about earlier this year. She hasn't been talked about for the race, but then CeCe hadn't been talked about for the race either. And I had known from Michael McCarthy about a week ago that they were appointing her for the Apple Blossom and not planning to run her there. So I think there's a chance that La Renolata could show up tomorrow for entries for that race at Oaklawn, but we'll see. But, Steve, that race is really something to look forward to, especially at this time of year where we have such a dearth of racetracks even operating right now.
Well, and there's no, you know, there's no doubt. I mean, not to you know, say anything about what Tampa and Gulfstream is offering, where there are selective, you know, there are some selective cards and portions of cards that, you know, that are of, you know, some quality. However, not compared to what, you know, what Oaklawn is basically doing. I mean, the second half of these cards at Oaklawn are almost invariably all allowances. And, you know, even on Thursday when they get going again this week, you got a $50,000, you know, money allowance for fillies and mares as the eighth, as the feature. You've got the seventh is a 16,000 optional claimer starter allowance combined, mile and 3/16 for four and ups, with some familiar names. In fact, I'm just noticing that, you know, Amos scratched that Charlie's Art Angel on Saturday and scratched for this spot. That always gets my attention. 3-1, the 7, Charlie's Archangel, or Archangel. And then, yeah, there's a couple of cheaper races on either side of the pick four, but, you know, the horse flesh available at Oaklawn right now, I mean, is, you know, it's like prime meat season.
And I agreed with you 100% in terms of, I thought Improbable ran a very good race in defeat to a very tough foe in Tom's Detente. And that was a very good comeback effort on the part of Improbable. And I agree with Andy, I mean, and you, that the Bent Mile would certainly make a lot of sense for him down the road. I talked to Baffert a while back, not too long ago, and asked him about McKenzie. And McKenzie, who got beat 28 lengths in the Saudi Cup, lost a lot of weight in terms of that trip to Saudi Arabia. But he's put the weight back on. He's scheduled to go back into training here this week. And on a race that is on the radar for McKenzie, and I'm not surprised that it would be, is the Mem Mile, because that's a race that, you know, the Connections would dearly love to win, considering the nightmare trip he had in the race last year as the favorite, got beat 3/4 of a length by Matoli. And boy, the more you look back, just to run that well against Matoli is pretty darn good in its own right. But a lot of people were of the opinion that McKenzie might well have won that race if he hadn't had such a horrible trip. And don't forget that McKenzie has bounced back off a clunker before. He ran a poor race as a three-year-old in the Breeders' Cup Classic when he got beat 31 lengths, and then he came back last year off of that poor effort at the end of 2018 and had a very good 2019 campaign. my point being that McKenzie certainly is capable of rebounding from that dismal Saudi Cup performance and putting together a good campaign in the second half of this year. So I'm looking forward to that. A five-year-old McKenzie could be a pretty salty equine athlete here as we hopefully get racing going on a big scale again at some point this year.
Well, there'll be, I think, a trickle, and you know, as we kind of came up a little bit earlier this morning, you know, with either with Sid or with Marcus Hirsch, you know, there'll be some openings. I do want to mention one piece of news which has hit the which has just hit the wire. Hank Steinbrenner has died. He's been sick, and it's not a corona thing. Hank Steinbrenner, who is on the board at OBS and was the Steinbrenner brother that, you know, has been, you know, I think more involved in the horse, you know, in the legacy of George, of his father's horse interests. And, just 63. And, very sorry to hear this. Hank Steinbrenner. I'm sure there'll be a lot. There'll be a ton on a line, but I wanted to make people aware of the horse connection because maybe we'll get a chance to talk to Tom Ventura. But Hank was very involved in the Ocala and the Kinsman side of things, John. Ocala.
John Fulton was a longtime trainer here in Southern California in the 70s and 80s. In fact, won the very first Japan Cup. And he trained for George Steinbrenner. And I remember asking him one day, we played basketball every Tuesday near Santa Anita. And one day I asked him, I said, what's Mr. Steinbrenner like? And I fully expected him to say, oh, he's one of the hardest owners I've ever had. And because of the fact with Billy Martin and everything, I thought I'd probably hear what a jerk he is or what a tough guy he is or this. That was a complete opposite. He said he's one of the best owners I've ever had. He takes the ups and downs as good as anybody I've ever had. So it shows you sometimes you get an assumption of somebody without knowing them. And then when you find out something more, you know, close up like that, you end up being surprised. So I always remembered that. And George Steinbrenner, boy, he loved the Yankees, but the next thing he would have really wanted to do was win the Kentucky Derby, and it was a shame with Bellamy Road that off that sensational Wood Memorial. It would have been pretty nice for George Steinbrenner if he would have been able to win a Kentucky Derby with him.
Every trainer, John Ward would have told you the same thing. Everybody that I ever heard from regarding George Steinbrenner and you know, his management, he essentially, you know, didn't, you know, he wasn't a big interfere, you know, didn't, you know, countermand the horsemen that he worked with. And he had, they had plenty of success in Dream Supreme. John, I appreciate this. Sorry for the brevity, but we'll talk soon. And, of course, John's column at Express Pet. And, John, keeping tabs, as you can tell, keeping tabs of everything. And we'll talk next week. Stay safe.
Take care.
John White, everybody. And John, along with Andy Serling, Sid Fernando, Kim Weir from TRF, and Marcus Hirsch. Right? And Sid, right? Marcus, Kim, Sid, John, Andy. There you go. Tomorrow, Scott Young is going to visit. Trainer on the Oklahoma-Texas circuit. And right now, he's second in the standings. And I think John Lease as well. So some Will Rogers tomorrow. A little more Sid. We'll discuss Mr. Big News, who is okay. we'll get to Pete. We didn't talk to Pete last week, so Pete Fornital. Seth Merrow, I'm sure he'll do some Tampa with you tomorrow. All right. Good luck if you're playing. You got Fauner and Will Rogers. We gave you some ideas. I might play a little on the fly. All right. If I have some ideas, I'll tweet them out. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Casey on the board. Replay 6 to 9 tomorrow. Archive and podcast, etc. in a little bit. And I'll talk to you in the morning. Stay safe.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years old and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gaming Support Line 800-522-4700.